So we're going to start, as always, a little parsha. This is a little bit tricky for me because, as you probably know, or maybe don't know, but I think I've told you, when I do parsha here, it's always last year's drasha. You know, I don't know if I ever tell you that. No? It's always whatever drasha I gave in shul last year, so I have not yet found a hetzer to record on Shabbos, so I just give it in yeshiva the following year. So normally that works out okay, because even though sometimes it's about things that are going on, but like you could fudge it enough, and you know, there's a... But sometimes it's like, it's very inspiring to think about what we were dealing with the previous year. Sometimes very sad to think about what we were dealing with the previous year. And this one was a tough one, because this was Parshas Emor, Tavshin Pei Aleph, was immediately after we found out about what happened in Meron last Lag BaOmer. So it was like we mamish, you know, went into Shabbos barely being able to breathe, and was and trying to process things. So I'm going to try to share with you what I said at that time, and then maybe if you know, we can provide a year's worth of perspective on it, maybe that that would be beneficial as well. So we'll start with Torah, because that's what you're supposed to do. When we talk about the Isra of Osov Espino, the Torah says, Lo sishchtu biyom echad, that Osov Espino, that the parent and offspring, the mom and the offspring animal, should not be shechted on the same day. It seems, though, that there's an inappropriate usage of the plural form, tishchtu. The Isra is for any single individual to shecht Osov Espino biyom echad. It's not only on multiple individuals. Why would the Torah speak in the plural rather than the singular? Meaning, if I happen to have both of the animals, I'm also not allowed to shecht both of them. It's not only about two people shechting on the same day. You know, the Gemara says, "Barbar prakam b'shana." You know, you have to be modia, the person you're selling the animal to, that ima macharti ayom, bita macharti ayom, because it could be that otherwise they're going to shecht. So it's true also about multiple people, but it's fundamentally true about one person shechting also Vespino as well. Furthermore, the Balamar at the very end of Pesachim asks why it is that we don't say Shechianu on the mitzvah of Sirius HaOmer. After all, we say Shechianu over most other time-specific mitzvahs that come up only once in a long while, like Lulav, for example, Shofar, Megillah. We do have a Shechianu in these things. Balamar suggests that there's no Shechianu because without a Korban Omer, we're unable to perform the mitzvah in its real complete sense. And that diminishes the simcha of the mitzvah. Meaning, as we know, we paskin that Sirius HaOmer b'zman hazeh is the Rabbanan, because we don't have the Korban Omer. The Korban Omer is what triggers the Chiyuv Svira. So without the Korban Omer, it's a little bit sad. We're looking at this shell of a mitzvah. We're looking at a mitzvah that is not what it should be. It's not what it ought to be. That's why, right after Sirius HaOmer, Harachum on Yaxalon of Azvishim, Korban Erev Yamein, right? That's why we dafka daven for the Beis. We always want the Beis HaMikdash, but we daven for it right after Sfiras HaOmer, because we just did a mitzvah that's barely itself because it's only Drabbanan. However, Rav Soloveitchik points out that this answer only works if you assume Sfiras HaOmer is man as Drabbanan. The Rambam understands that Sfiras HaOmer is not bound to the Korban HaOmer and is a mitzvah d'oraisa b'zman hazeh. So how would the Rambam explain why we don't say Shechianu on Sfiras HaOmer? Right? Meaning you have to explain the Lefi those Shitos that we still do have the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, that it's still just as exciting as it always was. Maybe we don't have the Korban Omer, and it got nothing to do with Sfiras HaOmer, if you hold Sfiras HaOmer b'zman hazeh is d'oraisa. Rav Sternberg points out a lot of Klal Yisrael seems to paskin that it's d'oraisa, because they say every day before they count the Omer, so they say against the halacha that they're about to fulfill the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer like it says in the Torah. The halacha is not that you're fulfilling the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer like it says in the Torah. What do you do then about the Shechianu? And third question, well, leave the third question. I mean, the third question that I posed last year is just like, how do you process what's going on? So last year, my brother, Shlita, sent me the drasha that he gave in his shul in San Jose, California. And without going into the Torah content, by now I've totally forgot the Torah content, his message was very simply, and I think it's an important message, particularly in difficult times, is that particularly when there's tremendous suffering in Klal Yisrael, when there's tremendous suffering in the world, that the avoda sometimes is just to feel the pain. The avoda sometimes is not to fix anything, not to respond, not to come up with a kuntz or a way to process. Sometimes the avoda is just to feel the pain, just to open up our hearts to the point where we feel that pain. There's time for introspection very often later on. There's time for self-improvement later on. There's never a time for, oh, but whose fault is it? You know, obsessing over every detail, as people tend to do at Shiva calls and things like that. There's never really a time for that. But there's a time for introspection, and that has to be done. There's a time for self-improvement, and hopefully by now, we've done that. We've done, and we'll continue that process. But at the moment, at that poignant and powerful and painful moment, the avoda is to just absorb and to feel. My father once mentioned to me that after the Holocaust, nobody spoke about it for decades. The greater the tragedy, the longer it takes just to absorb it, just to be able to know how to absorb it in a meaningful way and to speak about it in a meaningful way. We can't speak about it until we absorb it. And therefore, very often, when there's something extremely painful, that's just the avoda. The avoda is to feel the pain. Rav Tversky Shlita made this point in the context of understanding the Rambam in the third parak of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam lists those who don't have a chelek in Olam Haba. And among the list are those who are poresh midarkei tzibur. So in Halach Yir Aleph, the Rambam writes, that doesn't mean that a person has violated Averos. To the contrary, the Rambam writes, Afal pi shelo avar Averos. Person's a tzaddik. He hasn't done any Averos. He's Porish midarkei tzibur if he lives outside the context of the rest of Klal Yisrael. If his existence is not connected to the existence of Klal Yisrael, he's Porish midarkei tzibur. In the Rambam's terminology, what does it mean that he exists outside of Klal Yisrael? Lo nichnas bitzarasan. That he just doesn't enter the tzaras of Klal Yisrael. It's just not nogeya him, the tzaras of Klal Yisrael. Someone else's tzaras is someone else's tzaras. I have enough of my own tzaras to worry about. I don't have to worry about someone else's tzaras. That's lo nichnas b'tzaras, and that is a porish midarkei tzibur, and that is ein lo chelek li'olam haba. So the avoda is, Rav Tversky pointed out, very often just to be nichnas b'tzarasan. Some Jews do that viscerally. There's no thought process. There's no program to it. They just feel. Others are not at that madrega and have to be misbonane a little bit to contemplate and to focus on the tragedy, even if our knee-jerk reaction sometimes is to just look away from it and try to distract ourselves with something else. But we have to get to that point of nichnas b'tzarasan. That's the avoda, to feel the pain of others. I don't remember who it was, but I wrote here in my drasha from last year that one of the chevra in the shir here mentioned that that this is the sometimes the greatest source of comfort. When being Menachem Avel, we're familiar with the halacha that we don't initiate conversation, which is a fascinating idea, that we don't initiate conversation with Menachem Avel, particularly because Chazal derived from the pasuk Vanik Dom that the silence is an indication of avelos, meaning the avel is also not supposed to be shol b'shalom. The avel is not supposed to be engaged in too much conversation either. Silence is an indication of avelus. So how's that supposed to go exactly? You go there, you're silent. The avel's sitting there being an avel, not saying anything. The elamai, I forget, maybe someone here remembers who it was that said this. It's good for it. Elamai, essentially, we sit there silently to express to the mourner that we're also mourning. That we're also in a sense of avelus, imo anochi b'tzara, and through that shared experience of avelus, the avel finds a small amount of comfort that he's not alone. My brother pointed out that there's another reason that when a tragedy strikes, especially like the one that happened on Lag BaOmer last year, that you can't react immediately. You know, in today's day and age, like there's this need. Every rabbis in particular are susceptible to this. Everyone feels like they need to have a take. They need to have something that you say right away, a statement that's released, an email that's sent out, whatever. Everyone has to have like something like immediate, or an immediate response to something. And sometimes that's just not healthy. Sometimes you don't need an immediate response. You just need to absorb. And one of the reasons for that is, we don't even know exactly the magnitude of the tragedy when the tragedy first happens, right? At that time, this time last year, you know, on Erev Shabbos, did we know how many families, how many fathers, brothers, sons were never going to return home, and how many would never return to a normal life, and how it was too new. We couldn't absorb it yet. Sometimes we need a little nishma before there's an asa. Sometimes we do need to just listen a little bit. Shrav Salvechik explains, to answer our questions, that we don't say Shechianu on Sfiris HaOmer, because Shechianu is said when we've arrived at the destination. v'giyanu l'zman hazeh. The very nature of Sfiras HaOmer is that we're making it clear that we haven't yet arrived at the destination. That's what Sfiras HaOmer is. We're counting toward the destination. There's a process, and you can't skip steps in that process. You have to let the process happen. Last year at this time, we were under the impression that the challenging, year and change that humanity had endured was coming to an end, at least in Eretz Yisrael at that time. Last year, they were ahead of the game with the vaccine, and it was such a big bracha, and we thought that this was the end, and like Lag BaOmer would be the big celebration to sort of like put the stamp of Sof Pasuk on the pandemic. But we don't get to write the last chapters. We don't know how things play out. Hashem told us that there's no Shechianu during Sfira, that we're not there yet. We're not Higianu Lazman Hazeh, and we never know when we get to Lazman Hazeh. But that's what Rav Soloveitchik saying, that when you're in the middle of a process, you're not Higiyanu yet, Lazman Hazeh. Zalman Saratskin points out in his Aznaim LaTorah that the Gemara in Chulin Daf Pei Beis derives from the phrase Lo Sishchutu in the context of Osav Espino, that Melamed Shim Shachat Ru'uvein Asa'im V'achar Kach Shachat Shimon Esaben V'Hisru Baloka, that it doesn't have to be the same person. Like we said before, that if Ruvain shachts the mother and then Shimon shachts the son, as long as he gave Shimon Hasra'a, Shimon is going to get Malkus. So imagine two men, Ruvain and Shimon. They're not brothers, even though that's always the example good, but they're just two guys, right? It's, once they're finished with their oxes goring each other, and once they're finished with all the other cases and doing all their Yibam and everything else, right? So they're two guys, Ruvain and Shimon. And they never met each other. They don't even live in the same city. Shimon has this beautiful animal to shecht, and it's going to provide his family with a delicious veal dinner because it's a baby. So baby, that's how they make veal, right? You're familiar with this? It's a different parsha for a different time, right? They torture these little baby animals by not letting them move and develop any muscle tone or whatever, but the meat is delicious. So he has this little baby. He's going to have a delicious veal dinner. But because Reuven, who he doesn't even know, has shechted the animal's mother, which is a pretty normal, neutral, benign action, it generated potential isadaraisa for Shimon. He's impacted Shimon's avodas Hashem and forced Shimon to modify his behavior. The actions and circumstances of one Jew, says Rav Zalman Saratzkin, impact every Jew. That the Osav Espino teaches us the power, Lo Sishchatu teaches us the power of how one Jew impacts every other Jew, how one has to be part of the tzibur of Klal Yisrael. So, when it comes to the aftermath of something as tragic as what happened last year, the natural and hopefully I think immediate reaction is just to like take a step back, just to not celebrate as much. I held last year very strongly that everything should have been canceled, all the celebrations and everything else for Lag BaOmer. Maybe that's because of my lack of a relationship with Lag BaOmer. Okay, you can argue with me about that later, but Rabbi Yisrael Reisman had a vart. He had a beautiful idea from Rav Gedalia Shur, in the piyut of L'chai Olamim that we say in Yom Noraim. Each of the phrases are opposites. Hadeya v'hadibur, right? Why are deya and dibur opposites? Because normally siyag l'chachma shtika. So if a guy's talking too much, probably an indication of lack of deya. Hahod v'hahadar. Hadar is outer beauty. And that's why Nesrog is described as Priyetz Hadar, because it has a beautiful exterior, but it's really nothing to look at from the inside. And Hod is inner beauty. Rashi explains, Kikaran or Panav of Moshe Rabbeinu is Karnei Ahod, because it was an internal glow that was sort of escaping from him, but it was this internal glow. And often we find those qualities often are mutually exclusive, because it happens to be people with tremendous outer beauty are treated in such a way where they often are a few steps behind in developing the proper midos because of the way that they've been treated their whole lives. That's often the case. When two midos don't typically go together, it's only l'chay olamim. That's for the Ribono Shel Olam. That's not for us. Only Hashem can make sense of a Lag BaOmer and what happened on that Lag BaOmer. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can have that coexistence. We're just left with the task of feeling the pain. And, you know, it's ironic that sometimes the greatest source of comfort is that pain that we're supposed to feel. Remember last year on Erev Shabbos, Parshas Emor, all day I just left the door to my office open, at home, and there's a door that goes right out to my driveway, so I just left the door open, and it was like a parade of people just coming in to get a hug and to cry. I mean, there was no one had anything to say. And, you know, and there's an expression that I'll paraphrase without saying exactly, that there's nothing quite as whole as a broken people. You know, the idea that people do feel the pain, the idea that people do come together, that's part of what Klal Yisrael is, and that's part of what gives Klal Yisrael its kochos, what gives Klal Yisrael its ability to go on. So a year later, we've had time to process a little bit, we've had time to think about what happened, and one of the enduring messages for me, at least over the course of the year, are the relationships that the families of the Niftarim have made with each other and have made with Klal Yisrael. And that ability to bring everybody else, bitzarasan, to bring everyone else into the tzaros that are uniquely theirs because it's their family members. But they somehow managed to walk that line of, well, it's their tzara, to appreciate that it was much bigger, that it impacts all of Klal Yisrael. And you see sometimes, like you look at the pictures of the family members, these are very, very different kinds of people, very different families. You know, a Taimani guy from wherever, you know, is very different than like a modern Orthodox guy from Teaneck. Like very, very different kinds of families that have developed meaningful, real, powerful relationships and have used those relationships to reach out to other people. And that ultimately, as far as we're going to be able to understand in this world, that ultimately is the only nechama. So I would think, looking back a year later, even though you would think that something like this, talking about this, would ring a little hollow, a year later, I think adrabba, that looking back a year later, we can really better appreciate, we're more ready to not understand, but we're more ready to absorb where we're supposed to go from here. And the answer of where we're supposed to go from here is very clearly during a period of Sfira, where the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva were lo nagu kavod zeh lezeh, and that's why we have all the avelus of Sfira, is to appreciate that ability to be nichnas imo b'tzarasan, that ability, lo sishchetu b'yom echad, to appreciate that what happens to one Jew impacts every Jew, and Be'ezer Hashem we should see that what impacts one Jew, that what happens to one Jew impacts every Jew, not only in the bad times, but also in times of great rejoicing and great simcha as well.